And so this morning we're going to talk about the needs of a husband. And I mentioned that last time there were two. Most everybody knew what one of them was, and there's been some guessing about what the other one is. And in fact, I asked, I think, about half a dozen wives what they thought the second one was. And they said food, fishing, you know, those kinds of things. So we're going to talk about the other one. I've been married this next year in 2006. Patty and I will have been married 35 years, and I've been pastoring for 30 years. And in that 30 years, I've done a ton of marriage counseling and read lots and lots of books on marriage and listened to tapes, gone to seminars, etc. And as I, over the last 35 years, thinking about our marriage and the things that we've struggled with, and then the counseling and the reading, et cetera, this is what we're going to talk about this morning, is, in my opinion, from talking to the wives, last week I talked to the husband, talking to the wives, this is the really big issue. Now, part of the problem, I shouldn't say part of the problem, the major problem that men have with their wives is they don't understand them. One of the things that I say all the time is that men tend to treat their wife like a man. We are a man, we think like a man, we know, you know, what men are. I buy my wife a fishing pole for our anniversary, and think she'll like it. And so we do that. And so a problem we have is not understanding our wives. And but the problem is just as great from the other perspective of women not understanding their husbands. And this thing that we're going to talk about this morning, in my opinion, is the big issue in the sense of understanding. So with that as an introduction, number one, the number one need of a husband is respect. Now, it's important to understand that these needs are by creation. In other words, God created men a certain way. He created women a certain way. And when we talk about these basic needs, we're talking about that which God has created us with. It's the way we're wired. It's the way God has made us. And so as we deal with these, I, dealing with Patty, with her needs, you know, one of the things that was a big issue with us in the sense of a need was the need for communication. And that is a really, really important need in the sense of our unity, our oneness that God intends for us to have. I could go days without saying a word, and that would kill her. And my thinking often was, well, just kind of work at this a little bit, you know. That's just the way you were raised. That's the way your mother was, and so that's the way you are. We could probably train you otherwise. It was a while before I began to understand this is not something by upbringing. It's by God's design in the sense of the need for communication. And so this need for respect is God-given, God-designed. It's not something that you're going to change. Now, in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 33, here's kind of the basic verse that says it all in the sense of husbands and wives. Nevertheless, let each individual among you also love his own wife. Love his own wife. That's a husband's responsibility put in a word. Husbands, love your wives the way Christ loved the church. Love your wives the way Christ loved the church. And a husband loves his wife, and we talked about that last time we got together, is by identifying those needs, sacrificing. Husbands, love your wives the way Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. Gave himself up for her. That's a husband's responsibility. It's to love his own wife, even as himself. And then to the wife, let the wife see to it that she respect her husband. That she respect her husband. Now, if we were to talk about this love issue for a minute, I could ask the question, is my love for my wife supposed to be conditional or unconditional? And your answer would be, unconditional. Real love is always unconditional. And we can say that because that's the love that God models, is unconditional love. So how about respect? The respect that a wife shows to her husband, is it to be conditional or unconditional? It's to be the same, unconditional. Now, as I talk with women and wives about this, in this area, the thing always comes back to the husband's behavior, in the sense that he doesn't deserve respect because of the way he's acting. And then if you carry that out to the logical conclusion, is that means that the husband ought not to love you because of the way you're acting. And once a marriage is on the basis of behavior, it doesn't have a chance. It has to be on the basis of biblical principle, and love has to be given in an unconditional way on the part of her husband. That is, when a man says, I don't love my wife anymore, that's not a biblical statement. That's a fleshly statement. That's a worldly statement. It's basically saying, I don't have warm fuzzies anymore because of the way she's acting or the way she's behaving or the way she's treating me. That's not the way God loves me. That's not the way he loves you. And the admonition to husbands is to love your wives the way Jesus, the way Christ loves the church. And that means we love them unconditionally. It's not based on performance. Anytime love becomes based on performance, that is no longer love. And in the same way love is to be unconditional, so is respect. And once that respect becomes conditional, it is no longer biblical, and it is no longer really respect in the true sense of what the Bible teaches. And so it's important, this verse is a critical foundational verse, is that my love for my wife is unconditional. It's not based on her performance. It's not based on if she's good. And then her respect for me is not conditional. It's unconditional. It's not based on my performance. It's not based on the fact that I've been good or bad. It's based on the command of the Word of God. And that's what the Word says. This is what wives do. This is what they're supposed to do before God. Now, none of this that I'm going to say this morning would work if God were dead. If God were not in the mix, if he were not involved in this process, if he were not involved in my life and in Patty's life in empowering and changing, this wouldn't work. But because God is not dead and he's very much part of our marriage, then these principles work. And they're the only ones that do. Now, when you think the way the world thinks, and the world has a philosophy, and it's broadcast to us continually through television programs and movies and every place else, this is the philosophy of the world. It's based on the premise that God is dead. The world doesn't believe that God's interested, he's involved, and therefore they then begin to teach love in a way that is contrary to biblical principles. The problem is we watch those movies, watch those television programs, we begin to adopt that philosophy into our own thinking and our own marriages, and we're going to have major problems. And so we have to base our marriage and our behavior on the Word of God, because God is alive and he empowers me and he empowers my wife and he supernaturally changes us and works in us when we follow the principles of the Word of God. So that's the first thing that's so important to understand, is that love is given by a husband unconditionally. Respect is given by a wife unconditionally, not on the basis of performance. And so that's a husband's primary responsibility, is to love his wife the way Christ loves the church. A wife's primary responsibility as a wife is to respect her husband. She needs to do that. She needs to work at it diligently, because that's what God will bless, and that's what will cause the marriage to grow. Now, the basis for this, as I said, is creation. Psalms chapter 8, verse 4 through 6. What is man? Now, as you read the Old Testament and the New Testament, one of the things that's clear is that the word man is often used as mankind, talking about people in general. Other places, the word is used for male, or sometimes the word female is used. And it's both of the times in both the Hebrew and the Greek just translated man. And often you can tell from the context, and the New Testament is fairly easy whenever that's happened, because it's always in contrast with women. A man, woman, man, woman, man, woman, so you understand it. But there is a different Greek word for the word man in the sense of male as opposed to mankind, as well as for Hebrew. This verse is talking about males, men, and it's a reference to Adam, and it's also a reference to Christ, as Adam being a type of Christ. What is man that thou dost take thought of him, and the son of man that thou dost care for him? Yet thou hast made him a little lower than God, and dost crown him with glory and majesty. Thou dost crown him with glory and majesty. Now that is by design, by creation. When God created Adam as a man, he crowned him with glory and majesty. Now Adam lost that when he sinned, but there is still in every man this insatiable hunger and thirst for glory and majesty, because God created Adam with that glory, with that majesty, a little lower than God. It was lost by what Adam did, but every man is craving it, hungering for it, thirsting it, trying to find it in a variety of different places in different ways. That's why men often become addicted to hobbies, sports, work. It's all a pursuit of what they had in Adam when God created them, glory and majesty. God created man with glory and majesty, and there is in every man the desire to get that back, to re-experience that glory and majesty that God created them. That's why one of the things that, at least the women I know, often joke about male egos, and lots of comedians do as well. It's fairly well known all over the world that this issue of male ego is this, and it's part of the searching, the seeking, the desiring for this glory and majesty that we were created with by God. Number two, a man's greatest fear is shame, embarrassment, humiliation. A man's greatest fear is to be shamed, embarrassed, or humiliated. Now, as I work with men, leadership, class, E-men, a variety of other situations like that over the years, and examining my own life and thinking about the things that are a problem in my life, one of the biggest problems, I wouldn't say one of the biggest problem that men have in their spiritual pilgrimage, becoming like Christ, is the problem that they are image managers. Image managers or image projectors. And we learn to do that at a very young age, is that is to project an image of what we think that people expect of us. And what happens when you become an image manager is your ability to know what you really are, it becomes very, very difficult. Men lose touch with who they really are. And then the discipline of confession of sin, self-examination and confession of sin as a key to spiritual growth becomes very difficult for many men to accomplish in their life, because all of their life they've been projecting an image. Now, that's all on the basis of this fear of humiliation and shame. And so we begin to be somebody that we're not. We begin to pretend. It was the basic sin of the Pharisees, is that they, on the outside, appeared to be very holy and godly, but on the inside were full of all kinds of, Jesus said, rottenness and sin. And that wasn't just a problem with the Pharisees. That's a problem with every single man, in the sense that we project an image of what we are when we really aren't. And every man lives with a fear that somehow he's going to be discovered, that people are going to know what's really going on the inside, even though he's not communicating it, he's not showing it, he's hiding it, he's burying it in any and every way he can think of possible to do that. Men do that at work, they do that in their marriage, they do it in their friendships, in every relationship. They're continually projecting an image, being somebody that they're really not. And they're continually living with this fear that they're going to be found out, that what they really are on the inside is somehow going to leak through and people will discover that. And so every man lives with this continual fear of being humiliated and embarrassed. Here's a question. We might call this a bonehead Bible question. What prayer request is most often given in the Bible? Here, let me read it to you. Psalms 31:17. Let me not be put to shame, O Lord, for I call upon thee. Did you know that little phrase, that prayer request in the Bible is given over 50 times? The second most often, if you're curious, is deliver me from my enemies. But this is the most often given prayer request in the Bible. It's most often in Psalms. David was the one who wrote much of the Psalms. He wrote about half of the Psalms, but there were other authors. Ezra wrote some. Moses wrote some. Asaph wrote some. But almost every author of the Psalms included this request in there someplace. Solomon regularly referred to it, both in Proverbs and Ecclesiastes. Let me not be put to shame, O Lord, for I call upon thee. Psalms 119:31, I cleave to thy testimonies, O Lord, do not put me to shame. Psalms 25:2, O my God, in thee I trust, do not let me be ashamed. Psalms 25:20, guard my soul and deliver me, do not let me be ashamed, for I take refuge in thee. Psalms 31:1, in thee, O Lord, I have taken refuge, let me never be ashamed. Psalms 71:1, in thee, O Lord, I have taken refuge, let me never be ashamed. Psalms 44:15, all day long my dishonor is before me and my humiliation has overwhelmed me. And then Psalms 119:39, turn away my reproach which I dread. And that is an accurate statement about what most men feel. Turn away my reproach which I dread. Now, as you study this topic, just from a biblical perspective, one of the things that you will cause you to gain a great deal of appreciation for the Lord is that the Bible clearly teaches that one of the key things that Jesus did on the cross is he took our shame. That on the cross, and the reason for death on the cross was because it was a death not designed just for pain, but designed for humiliation. For the person who was dying to do something that would humiliate them more than any other form of death. And then Jesus died that death. And so Isaiah says that he took all our shame because of our sin. He took it upon himself and he experienced all the shame that mankind experiences for their sin. He experienced it on himself. And so all the Psalms are in a way a prophecy of the words of Jesus in his life. But he willingly took my shame and your shame. But the fact remains is that men, the fear of humiliation and shame is the greatest fear for them. That's why when you would do a survey and you'd ask men and you find out what their greatest fear is speaking in public. That's not really speaking in public, it's the fear of being humiliated. And when you stand up and speak in public, the opportunity increases dramatically to do just that. Number three, a contentious woman is one who shames her husband. Let me just say this up front, we'll get it repeated, but I want to say it a number of times, is that the need for glory, the need for respect is God-given, and nobody can meet that need in a man's life like his wife can. His children can do a pretty good job, his friends can, his boss can, but nobody comes close to meeting it like a man's wife. And the reason for that is because that's the way God made it. That's the way he designed it to be. A wife can give her husband glory like no one else can, and then the opposite is just as true. Nobody can shame a man as much as his wife can. Nobody can humiliate a man as much as his wife can. Friends, boss, children, they can all do it, but nobody has the potential of doing it greater than a wife does. And so a wife has at her disposal the ability to give glory like no one else can, or also to shame like no one else can. As you read the book of Proverbs, you'll see this phrase, contentious woman. Again, repetitious. Repetition in the Word of God is emphasis. And so it's repeated regularly. Proverbs 27:15, a constant dripping on a day of steady rain and a contentious woman are alike. He who would restrain her restrains the wind and grasps oil with his right hand. Proverbs 19:13, the contentions of a wife are a constant dripping. Proverbs 21:9, it is better, and we're a comparison thing, it is better to live on the corner of a roof. Now, how pleasant would that be? And we're not talking in the middle of the roof, we're talking about on the edge of the roof. It's better to live on the corner of a roof than in a house shared with a contentious woman. Why? Why is it better to live on a roof? Not just in a roof, but in the corner of a roof. It's more enjoyable to live on a roof than it is in a house with a contentious woman. And the reason is because of the shame, the humiliation that a contentious woman brings into the life of a man and the unhappiness that he experiences. Better off to live on a roof. And it goes on and says, it's better to live in a desert land than with a contentious and vexing woman. Why is it better? It's because the unhappiness that comes into the life of a man who lives with a contentious woman is greater than he would experience if he lived in the desert with nothing. And so the point is being made by Solomon that a wife has a great deal of power and influence in her husband, both to make him happy and to make his life miserable by being a contentious woman. Proverbs 12:14. This is one that every wife ought to memorize. An excellent wife is the crown of her husband, but she who shames him is as rottenness in his bones. Now, as a wife, you kind of have the choice there. You can either be the crown of your husband or you can be rottenness in his bones. And the question is, how do you become rottenness in his bones? And the answer is quite simple there. She who shames him. So a wife has the privilege of giving him glory, being the crown of his head or being the rottenness of his bones on the basis of whether she shames him or whether she exalts him. Proverbs 14:1, the wise woman builds her house, but the foolish tears it down with her own hands. Probably a better word there would be that she tears it down with her own words and what she says. For a wife, and we're going to talk about how we do this. In other words, how is the some common ways to shame your husband. For a wife shames her husband by arguing with him, especially in public. Now again, having been pastoring for 30 years, being married for 35, reading books, as I hang out and eat meals with and just visiting around at different things, I make observations and I hear things continually as a pastor, as I pray for people, etc. And the number of wives who argue with their husbands in public, it's quite high. I remember visiting with a wife and she said, you know, my husband always has to be right. I wanted to say, but I didn't. I said, what is wrong with letting him always be right? It'll make him prideful. I know it will give him glory. There's this competition going on. And one of the things that a wife sort of just needs to put in her head is that God is the one who's made the rules, not me, not my husband, not mankind in general. God did. And God says that a wife's responsibility is to respect her husband, not to be contentious. And the qualities of a contentious wife are one who argues with her husband, who doesn't like, for some reason, him always being right. You can know in your mind that he's not always right, but let him think he is. There's nothing wrong with that. And the fact is, when your husband thinks he's always right, he will be way happier and therefore be a much better husband and much easier to live with than when you convince him that he's wrong at least half the time. Now, that may be true, and you may be right, but are you going to have a better husband, a happier husband, a more productive husband, a more spiritual husband, a husband growing closer to God on the basis of his being right all the time or wrong half the time on what it is you communicate to him? The fact is that when a man believes that he is right most of the time because of his wife's communication, he will be healthier, happier, stronger, and more spiritual, because that's the way God made him. God created men for glory, and they need to receive it from their wife. If they get it from their wife, it doesn't produce unbalance, it doesn't produce pride, it doesn't produce ego, it doesn't produce arrogance, it produces health and joy. When they get it from the world, from their work, from competition, from sports, then it'll produce arrogance and pride. See, that's the beauty of God's way as opposed to the world's way, is when you do it God's way, it doesn't produce the wrong quality, it produces the right quality, and when a man gets glory from his wife, it produces health, it produces confidence, it produces a sense of well-being. And when a wife believes it's her duty to keep her husband humble by pointing out his faults and arguing with him, she is doing great damage to the most clear need of his life. Number five, a wife shames her husband by correcting him. He may be telling a story about a fish he caught, and he says it's 14 inches and it was really 12, and you correct that little bit of discrepancy. To you, that's no big deal, and most husbands have learned to live with that. But inside, any man who is corrected by his wife, especially in public, though they're not going to lay down on the floor and cry, there's not going to be this visual awareness of the shame or the humiliation. It is there. Even when the correcting is in little details, it may be any number of things. The big question is, does it really matter that much that he got the birthday of your kid 2 days off? Does it really matter that the story he told was 2 inches longer than it really was? We make a big deal out of those things when they really aren't. And the damage that we do in correcting is much greater than the good we do in correcting. Number six, a wife shames her husband by ignoring him. Now, I don't think most wives do this purposely, but often it happens in public settings. It's just because you see people that you haven't seen, whether it's ladies or whatever, and in any kind of a public setting, often the husband will get ignored, and it communicates something to the husband when that happens. Number seven, a wife shames her husband by being critical of what he does. One of the surveys that was done is that 90% of men feel incompetent in most of the things that they do in life. There's a couple of areas they feel fairly competent in, but a whole bunch of areas they don't really feel competent in. And they're sort of bluffing it as they go through a lot of their life. The last thing they need is their wife amplifying that sense of incompetency by being critical of what they do or what they attempt. Often men are not particularly good. Some are, but some aren't at fixing things. And so they attempt to fix something, and the result is, I should have hired the plumber. Might be with the car, we should have taken it to the garage, or something of that nature. There's this criticalness in what he does, whatever area it might be. And it's just important to understand that it does no good. It doesn't improve the relationship. It doesn't improve the husband. It damages it. It would be nice and to find something good to say and something to compliment on rather than being critical. Number eight, a man's dignity is everything to him. A wife who builds her husband's dignity is a gift to him from God. Now, I never became more aware of this fact than when my dad was dying of liver cancer. He decided he'd already gone through one bout of cancer and decided he wasn't going to the hospital. He wasn't going to do all that again. He was just going to stay at home and die. And so the issue of pain was an issue, but that wasn't near the issue as his loss of dignity. As he became sicker and skinnier and less able to take care of himself, that was the big deal with my dad. And as I was there for much of that last 2 months of his living and observed him with me and other people who came to visit in my journal, I wrote that in there. The last thing that will die in my father is his dignity. And he guards that more than anything else. He protects that more than anything else. He absolutely refused to have somebody come and visit and see him in bed. He would get up out of bed when it looked like it was costing him days of his life in the sense of energy and get dressed and come out and sit on the couch and somebody would visit. And mom would get upset. I'd get upset. Dad, just stay in bed. He refused to do that, not because of the people, but because of his own sense of dignity and self-worth that he was guarding and protecting even to the last breath that he had. My mom didn't understand that because that's not, I mean, she would have stayed in bed. That's not near the need for a woman it is for a man. But his dignity, he guarded that, protected that, defended that to his last breath. And God has given a wife to a husband as a source, a major source of glory into his life. Proverbs 12:4, again, I'll read this to you. An excellent wife, great phrase, an excellent wife is the crown of her husband. That's how the Bible would define an excellent wife. She's the crown of her husband. She gives him glory. But she who shames him is as rottenness in his bones. Proverbs 31:10, an excellent wife, who can find? That means there's not a lot of them around. They're fairly rare. For her worth is far above jewels. Her worth is far above jewels. Why? Because she will bring more joy and happiness and self-worth into the life of her husband than any amount of possessions will. An excellent wife, that is one who is a crown to her husband, is worth more than jewels. Proverbs 18:22, he who finds an excellent wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. 1 Corinthians 11:3, I want you to understand that Christ is the head of every man, the man is the head of a woman, and God is the head of Christ. Now that phrase, head of a woman, not necessarily, it's not what's not being talked about here is who is boss. This word head is the issue of glory. And in fact, moving down to verse 7, that's verse 3. Verse 7 says, for a man ought not to have his head covered, since he is the image and glory of God. The woman is the glory of man. And what that means is that God designed that she would give glory to her husband in the same way that a man would give glory to Christ, and Christ gives glory to the Father. And you think that Jesus did what he did while he was here as a man, and all that he did to glorify the Father. And he states that repeatedly. And in the same way, a wife's responsibility before God is to give glory to her husband, to glorify him in the way that Jesus did the Father. And the hang-up is not with the principle. The hang-up is whether that he is worth it. You know, it's easy to do it with Jesus, but my husband's a different story. I mean, he does this, he does this, he does this, he does this, he does this. See, the principle is it's unconditional. And when you respect unconditionally, what you do is you exert tremendous influence for growth and change, that he becomes exactly what you are respecting him to be. See, love produces an environment of growth and change, and respect produces an environment of growth and change. And when it's conditional, it does just the opposite. When it's unconditional, then it becomes a positive force used by God, a relationship between a man and a woman that produce rapid Christ-like growth in their life. Let me say that again, 1 Corinthians 11:7, just keeping it, isolating the verse. The woman is the glory of man. That's God's intention. We'll do a paraphrase here. It's 1 Corinthians 11:7. A wife is the glory of her man. Not just a man in general, but her man, or she can be. That's God's intention, is that the wife be the source of glory in her husband's life. Number 9. A wife builds her husband's dignity by appreciating what he does. A couple of years ago, I had a wife call me and say, I want to come talk to you about our marriage. She came in and she said, you know, I've got a great husband, but I got one thing that just really bothers me, and it's just creating all kinds of problems, and that is he works 10 hours to 12 hours every day. And I said, is it required of his work, his job? No, it's not. He chooses to do that. And I said, do you know why he chooses to do that? She said, well, because he makes more money. And I said, have you ever said to him, thank you, you're a wonderful husband for working so hard to provide for your family? I said, have you ever done that? She said, no. If I did that, he'd work even more. I said, you know what your husband has is he has a glory deficiency. When a man doesn't get it from his wife, he's going to get it from his work. Man can't live without it. God created him for it. And so the primary source is to be the wife, but if that's not where it's coming from, then he will get it someplace. It may be his job, which is often the source, especially if he's competent at work and gets praise from those who are supervisors or friends at work. And another thing is that a man was created by God to be the provider. Our culture has changed that in the sense that most wives work and bring in money, but God designed that the husband be the provider. Easy to see in Scripture that was God's plan, that the husband be the primary provider. And so that's in him, that need to do that. There's a sense of worth or value that comes into his life when he works and earns money. And when you don't appreciate that as the wife, then it just kind of short circuits this whole thing. I said, just try it. Just see what would happen. If every time he comes home and he's just kind of dragging, put in a 10-hour day, 11-hour day, a 12-hour day, and you just say, oh, honey, you are so wonderful. I love you. Working all those hours just so you can provide for your family. She kind of rolled her eyes and said, okay, I'll give it a try. It wasn't very long after that I got a call, and she said, you know, I think it's working. He seems to be working less. Yeah, a guy will always hang out where he gets praise. We crave glory, and wherever we get it, that's where we're going to go. That's where we're going to spend time. One of the things that I say in my child-raising seminars is that our kids will work hardest to please the one who praises them the most. And one of the reasons why kids have a tremendous draw to peers is most of the time their peers will praise them more than their parents do. And so they will work harder at pleasing their peers than they will their parents. And so one of my goals as a dad was always to praise my kids more than anybody else does. One of the nice competitions I have going with my son-in-laws is to see who can praise their wife, my daughter, more, me or them. And so when we talk on the phone, if I praise Sarah a bunch, it hangs up, Mike tries to outdo me. And it's a good competition along that line. But the same thing is true. A man will give his time where he receives his glory. And if he receives that being involved in sports, if he gets that at work, if he gets that with friends at a whatever, or if he gets it at home with his wife, wherever he gets his glory, that's where he's going to spend his time. And so when a wife then begins to be critical of where it is he's receiving his glory, she's actually creating a greater problem, because he's going to be less inclined then, because that's a need that God created men with, and they're going to seek it. God designed that a wife would be the one who gives it to her husband. She can accomplish that better than anybody or anything. But when she doesn't, then he will find it somewhere. And often it's at his work. 10, a wife builds her husband's dignity by communicating to him that she values him more than anything or anybody else. As you read books on marriage counseling, most books will say the big three problems in marriages are money, in-laws, and sex. Almost every marriage problem will have one of those as a major problem, and often all three of them. Money, the pressure of financial pressure creates lots of marriage problems. In-laws are a major source of our marriage conflict. And as you begin to investigate what the reason for that is, it's because of this need that both a husband and wife have, that their husband or their wife would consider them to be most important in their life, and the in-laws may be doing nothing, but it's a perception. It's a perception on my part that Patty cares more for her mother and dad than she does for me, or on her part that I care more for my mom and dad than I do for her or you. That perception then really damages this, and especially in the life of a man who is seeking glory, when someone is more important in his wife's life as he would perceive that than he is, and it's going to create some major problems. And often you can undo that, not by how you spend your time, but how you talk. You just increase the praise, and it'll solve that problem. But when there's the glory deficiency, a man becomes jealous of almost everything that his wife does. It may be her involvement in church, in ministry in church, whatever it is. He is going to be jealous of what she does because he is starving for glory. And the primary glory giver is not doing it, so he's going to be jealous of those things that she gives her life to. Number 11, this is a biggie. A wife builds her husband's dignity by praising him for what he conquers. Now, man was wired by God to conquer. I preached a sermon a number of years ago. It wasn't original with me. And the title of it was, God created a man to find a cave with a bear in it, drive out the bear, and live in the cave. And a man is never more happy than when he is doing that. And, you know, the joke, universal joke is, you're driving someplace and you're late and the guy is lost and the wife says, ask somebody for directions. And a man refuses to. It's because he wants to conquer this thing. You know what a better line would be? I bet you can get us to where we're going without asking any directions. Yeah, I can do it. It may be fixing something that he's never fixed before. Maybe putting together a toy, not using the directions. But men are wired that way by God to conquer. And the average wife doesn't understand that. She sees it as foolishness. She sees it as male ego. But if you can just change your thinking around, that's the way my man is by God's design. And when he conquers things, it is the happiest that he can be. When he's done something he's not done before, when he's accomplished something that was difficult, God created a man to find a cave with a bear in it, drive out the bear, and live in the cave. That's the way men are made. That's the way they're designed. Our culture has feminized men, not by making them wear feminine clothes, but by taking the challenge out of life. See, we can't be what we were created to be if there's not some mountain to climb, some bear to drive out, some impossible task to overcome. We need to be doing that in our life to feel good about who we are. We were designed to conquer. We were designed to overcome. We were designed to fight bears. Read the Bible. description of men who are valiant warriors, the mighty men of David. You know, God puts that in the Bible for a reason. And as a wife, we need to recognize there's that insatiable need in the life of our husband to be a mighty man, a valiant warrior, to conquer. And sometimes it just shows up in sort of funny ways. Going someplace without looking, getting directions. You know, the ad on the television, it was on one of the basketball playoff things there. They got this car with this thing that the car has the computer that tells you where to go. And so they're advertising this, and then the wife says, "Why don't we turn this on?" Husband says, "I'll get there without that thing." So it's understanding that a man's dignity climbs tremendously when he tackles something that he's not accomplished before, when he gets someplace without directions, without somebody telling him how to get there and how to do it. And the last thing that a man needs for his dignity is for his wife to come and say, "Maybe if you did it this way, maybe if you put the screw in over here, maybe that door handle's on backwards." It may be right, but that's the last thing that a man needs to hear, is wife telling him how to do it and how to get to where he's going. And see, again, women don't understand that what they're doing is they're damaging the dignity of their husband, and that is the most precious thing in his life. There's nothing worth more to him than his personal dignity and self-worth. You've got the power to give it to him, and you've got the power to take it away. And often it's just innocent kinds of statements that at the moment don't seem to be that important, but have a great deal of consequence. And now, what does a man do when the wife's responsibility to give him respect is not met? Does he cry? He gets angry. You know, you're driving down the road. First fight we had, I mean, we'd been married about 5 minutes. I get in the car, we have a Volkswagen, and we're heading towards our honeymoon, and all my buddies are following me, honking, making a scene, and I'm trying to lose them. And Patty's over here telling me where to go. "Turn up here, turn over here." I mean, about 5 minutes later, I said, "Would you shut up?" What did she do? She cried. For the next 3 days, she cried. I mean, the honeymoon was awful. And we got to our honeymoon site. We were going to fix a nice dinner, but there was no can openers. I could get those cans open without a can opener. But Patty said, "Just go next door and ask for one." I got angry and she cried. It was a rotten honeymoon. So that's kind of how it went. Cry, anger, cry, anger, cry, anger. Two basic needs, love unconditionally and respect. We didn't know how to do either one of those. And so it's important that as a wife, you learn to read your husband. And when he gets irritated or angry in your conversations, your interactions with each other, recognize that that's an automatic response when his dignity is damaged, when you do something to shame him rather than to give him glory. And sort of instead of reacting to that anger and thinking he's a clod or an unspiritual sort of a whatever because he's getting angry, understand that's a great signal that you can take advantage of to understand as a wife that you have not met a basic need in his life that you are very capable of doing. 12, marriage is truly supernatural. And by that is God is very much involved in it and uses marriage for our spiritual growth. A marriage is truly supernatural, and God has given to the wife great power to make her husband super successful. Now, the old statement about behind every successful man is a wife, the most accurate way of saying that, behind every successful man is a wife who knows how to respect her husband. Behind every successful man is a wife who knows how to give her husband glory and how to be the crown of his life. And a man who is receiving glory will become very, very confident. He will become very balanced. He'll become very content in his life when he's receiving from his wife regularly respect, glory, and he's not going to be looking for it every place else in the world. Genesis 2:18, Then the Lord God said, "It is not good for the man to be alone. I will make him a helper. And that's what God designed a wife to be, as a helper suitable to him. And the key part of that being a helper is to give glory. 13, when a man is affirmed by his wife, he can conquer the world. When he is not, he is sapped of his confidence and even his feelings of manhood. Now, as a wife here today, you may think I'm overstating this, but it's important. You know, I am one in the sense of being a man, and I've worked with a lot of men, and this is not an overstatement by any stretch. It's a very accurate statement. And even as men often don't understand their wife, women often don't understand their husbands, and the key area they don't understand is this whole issue of dignity, self-worth, and the power they have to give glory and to give shame, often in just a word, sometimes even in just a look. A man's performance in every area of life is going to be dictated on his own sense of self-worth. And most of that self-worth is going to come from his wife. 14, a husband can slay dragons, climb steep mountains, win great victories. If he believes, his wife believes he can. Great statement I heard one time, and I was at a seminar when it was said, and it was one of those kinds of statements that it was a head jerker. You know, you're just kind of thinking and daydreaming and writing, and all of a sudden something just grabs your attention, and you think, I wish he'd say that again. In fact, the seminar I went to, he did say it again. And the statement went like this: a man is not what he thinks he is not even what his wife thinks he is. A man is what he thinks his wife thinks he is. And as he said that, I thought, yeah, that's exactly right. I'm not what I think I am. I'm not what you think I am. I'm not even what my wife thinks I am. I am what I think my wife thinks I am. That has the greatest power to mold me and to influence me and to shape me than any force in my life is my wife's belief and confidence in me. And when she says things like, you can do that, that is a powerful word that my wife says to me. It brings the best out in me when she says that. When she affirms my spiritual leadership, when she affirms my wisdom and taking care of the family, whatever it is, when she says, I trust you, it just causes a man to rise up to the occasion, and he becomes considerably more than he is, and he grows in his walk and his relationship with Christ when he believes that his wife believes in him. And that becomes important that be affirmed often. 15, if a man knows that his wife believes in him, he is empowered to do better in every area of his life. 16, a man's boss may disrespect him. His friends disrespect him, but if his wife respects him, he will be happy. One of the things I've discovered as a pastor working with pastors, I always have about 50 pastors I'm working with in a mentoring relationship, is some guys are very susceptible to the criticism of the people in their church. Every time we get together on Thursdays for 4 hours with a group of 10 pastors, and the emails that I get from them weekly as they interact with one another and hold each other accountable, there's always out of a group of 50 pastors, about 10 of them that are kind of going through it in their church. And as I look at these guys, I can predict their success as a pastor. I mean, I can predict it 100%. And one of the key ingredients is how susceptible are they to the criticism of people in their church. Because if that kills them and immobilizes them, they're done. They might as well go sell insurance because they're never going to make it in ministry. And they move to churches. You know, they stay here and then they go to here and they go to here. And they're looking for a church where nobody will criticize them. There is no such church. And they'll say it's one with no people. And so they just don't seem to be able to manage that as a leader, and it just paralyzes them. And as I thought about that, I said, how did these guys get to this place? Why is it that they're so susceptible to criticism? And one of the things that I found is a direct correlation between their susceptibility to criticism and the quality of their marriage. And when a guy in ministry has a great marriage and his wife is continually esteeming him and giving him glory, and he can manage that stuff, piece of cake, no problem. He can be a strong leader, and he can lead in the face of all kinds of opposition in his church when he's got a wife who stands by him and gives him glory. But when he doesn't, man, almost every little criticism derails him and sends him into a tailspin emotionally. A man who is receiving glory from his wife is a strong man who can lead and face all kinds of problems and pressures in life. And men face all kinds of pressures. There's all kinds of stress that's there. And God designed that they be strong by the glory they would receive from their wife. 17, a man's boss may respect him greatly, his friends as well, but if his wife does not respect him, he will be unhappy. This is by God's design. It's sort of like, you know, eat a breakfast and you feel full, go outside and eat some dirt. Are you going to feel full? I know you can put something in your mouth and you can even chew it and take it down into your stomach, but certain things were designed to give nourishment and certain things weren't. And respect and glory at work often tastes good at the time, but it doesn't meet the need. It doesn't meet the need because God didn't make it that way. It is not good for man to be alone. I will create for him a helper suitable for him. God designed that the wife be the one who give the man glory. He gets it from any other source, and it produces, it damages, it creates pride rather than good things. Number 18, behind every happy man is a wife who respects and affirms her man. We have a great marriage, been married 35 years. Wasn't always great, but today ours is a really, really, really good marriage. I couldn't hope for much more, and one of the reasons is my wife has become an artist at affirming me, at giving me glory. And sometimes she's so almost ridiculous and absurd in the words she says, it's humorous. You know, it's just laugh. That's funny. You know, but bring it on. Bring it on. I don't care if it's kind of funny or humorous. 19, you can't esteem, value, give glory to your husband too much. The more, the better. 20, a wife who respects her husband will receive great blessings from God. Now, how is a man to love his wife? Ephesians 5:25 says he's to love his wife the way Christ loves the church. How about the very first verse we read, Ephesians 5:33? How is he to love his wife? Nevertheless, let each individual among you also love his own wife. How? As himself. And one of the things that will determine how much he is able to love you is how much he loves himself. In other words, how much he esteems himself. That is not going to come on the basis of what he accomplishes in life. It will come on the basis of what his wife communicates to him. And so a wife who esteems her husband and gives glory to her husband and respects him the way the Bible teaches, she's going to receive great blessings from that because she's going to be changing her husband. And his ability to love her is going to go up and up and up and up because of his own self-worth and value going up. He will not be able to love you greater than he loves himself in the sense of his esteem, his value, his self-worth. He gets that from his wife. That's why Proverbs says that a wife tears down her own home. Two concluding verses, Proverbs 14:1, the wise woman builds her house, but the foolish tears it down with her own hands. And Proverbs 12:4 again, an excellent wife is the crown of her husband. An excellent wife is the crown of her husband, but she who shames him is as rottenness in his bones.